Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk. My name is Shay Marville, and I think one of the most important skills in this world is being able to have a conversation with a friend or a foe. Let's Talk is a podcast about listening, growing, connecting, and hoping through compassion and talking. And I mean really talking about the good things and the hard things, and with remarkable people living in a remarkable time. So let's talk. Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk. On today's show, I have the incredible, awesome privilege of having the CEO and co-founder of Figment, a company on a mission to grow adoption, growth, inclusivity, infrastructure of the Web 3.0 ecosystem. This man has been on a mission for 30 years, scaling the internet infrastructure system. He's also been an incredible friend. Lorian Gable, welcome to Let's Talk. So let's talk.
First of all, really appreciate the chance to speak with you. We've known each other for a long time, I think.
Yes.
And it is fantastic to hear your wonderful voice again. Literally, you're going to have the best voice in podcasting, I think. So, despite your choice of guests.
Okay, excellent.
You're going to do very well.
Well, you've been telling me to do this for a long time.
Right,
yes.
So let's see. So I am a lawyer by training, unfortunately, and practiced for 6 whole months many years ago. Although I think I'm still a member of the Ontario Bar. It was my if everything really blew up, and it was my worst case scenario. So I wasn't disbarred for any bad reasons. But in my early 20s, my younger brother and I started a company, and I think that was in the early 90s, and that's where you and I may have actually originally connected.
Yes.
Through various friends and coworkers. We were very fortunate and had a lot of good timing. And my brother is the smarter of our partnership, and had a fairly successful startup in the early internet space that we grew to a couple hundred people. And then after we sold that company, we took some time off. My brother went sailing with his now wife for a couple years around the world, taught himself how to sail on a relatively small boat, and miraculously managed to find his way back to Canada eventually. And then we started another company in the internet infrastructure space around data centers. And then I moved to New York was an early manager at another cloud-based tech startup. A couple more companies between us, and our current latest one, which is Figment Networks. But basically, you know, we're old enough to have patterns emerge in our lives. So what we've done is basically tried to find a new technology, which is intellectually interesting, and we think can possibly be transformative, and start playing with it mostly as hobbyists. And then if we think that there is something that might be able to be self-sustaining, can make some money, other people will be interested in participating in some way, people would join us who we like to work with, then we like to figure out how we can make that technology more accessible to the general public. And sometimes that's worked very well, and sometimes it hasn't. But that's just kind of been our approach, is to find something that's intellectually stimulating in the technology front usually, and then see if we can commercialize it, and then do that for a few years, and then take some time off to do other things that have nothing to do with commerce and business and all that.
Intriguing.
I've been very fortunate to, so far so good, and been very fortunate to be able to do that, and very fortunate to have started 4 companies with my younger brother, you know, which is has a whole sort of benefits that go along with trust and all that good stuff. So
I think you're kind of running over the story a bit. I think one of the most fascinating things about you and how you started was the relationship with your brother, Matt. And I believe he was in his last year of high school when we still had grade 13, I think. And you were, you know, I think you were practicing, or you just, you know, I think you were practicing when you all started the company. And I think what I'm curious about is how did the two of you know that this was something of value? And then have the motivation and the energy to turn it into something. Like, how did you know that?
Well, you know, I think there's two ways people take risks in their lives, or make it easier to take risks in their lives. There's actually probably three. I'm going to be making this up a little bit as I go, because I haven't really thought about this in this frame before, which is helpful. But, you know, one, you have very little to lose. So if you have very little to lose, then it makes it much easier to do things that seem to be risky or might in other circumstances be risky. The other one is where you have so much that if you lose something, then it doesn't really matter. And I suppose there's a third way, which is not to value things too much in life generally. Mm. So, you know, it's a transitory life, and don't get too attached to stuff. You know, maybe that's a third way is between those two. But, you know, we were in our early 20s. My brother hated high school and was actually dropping out in his senior year. And he may have had the only Jewish parent ever to let their kid drop out of high school. And so he was going to leave, and he had, you know, kind of two choices. He could work at a gas station, or he could pursue his passion in computers and the early internet. I just started working as a lawyer and, you know, kind of seeing what that possible life and career path looks like. And I'm not sure that, you know, I was having second doubts that spending the next 30 of your years behind a desk didn't seem to be something that I want in one place. Didn't sort of seem to had sort of created existential fear. That you can sort of see your life at 20 seems like a horrible thing in some ways. So the decision was relatively, and you're in your early 20s, so there was really no downside if we were making a mistake at all, because we could go back to our old careers or go back to school and didn't have a family to support, or, you know, any of the things that people think that prevent them from doing, you know, out of the box types of things.
I mean, I do think also your relationship with your brother, I think the trust that you have between each other, I think that probably propelled you both forward. Like, you just seemed like, I don't mean this in a mushy feet, like mushy lovey dovey way. I just mean, what I always observed about you guys is that you seem to have this sort of seamless trust, even though you're also really different from one another.
Yeah. Yeah, with a fairly significant age difference. You know, we're, I don't know, 7 or 8 years in age different apart. And in fact, we were probably the least close siblings you will ever find. Maybe it was because of the age difference.
Wow.
We share one parent and then have step parents on the other side. So there was a lot of time when I wasn't around. But we sometimes lived in the same house, but barely crossed paths. So it was a little bit ironic that we ended up working so well together. But yeah, I think it's safe to say that in 20 plus years, we've never had like a business dispute that's lasted for more than a day.
Right.
In any shape or form. Yeah, I've been very fortunate in that. You know, when you start with partners, there's a whole dance you have to do, you know, with any type of partnership, I suppose, romantic or otherwise, where you have to build trust and have that trust violated and et cetera. And we sort of sidestepped that whole process, and we're able to sort of build a few businesses based on, you know, having not to worry about all those issues.
Yeah. And I guess, and also being able to continually respect that you're both evolving continually, that, you know, that it's not about this progression of accumulation of things, but it's about this intellectual curiosity and interest. And both of you have that, but it comes from different points of view. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty key. You know, we live in a time, in a place where a lot of people have the opportunity to do things that don't just put food on the table, and you can have an intellectual or an emotional connection with. We're very fortunate in that way. You know, in the late 21st century, that, you know, despite all the problems, there's usually an avenue to do that. So very lucky in being able to, and I think that's, you know, pursuing something that you have an intellectual interest in. You know, the companies that we've started that weren't necessarily runaway successes, I think, you know, had more of a financial interest rather than an actual interest in the technology or the product itself. And so I can safely say that it makes those long days and nights a lot easier if you actually are stimulated by the subject matter.
But now you seem to be really well positioned as an early adopter to technology, to kind of like just flowing with and being open to whatever is coming up. And I mention this because I feel like one of the things we don't talk enough about right now are the opportunities in technology. And I think that's because there's so many of us who think we aren't a part of technology. Like, what the heck am I talking about? I'm a meditation teacher. I want to talk about technology. But the reason I think technology is so interesting is that it is like there's this velocity to the movement of everything because of technology. And so I'm really curious from your point of view, like how do you, like the work that you're doing now, like how is it sort of, you know, propelled by this new force of technology that we're sort of submerged in?
Great question. If you'll indulge me for a little bit.
To play
dorm room philosopher for a second. I don't think this is mine. I think I probably read this somewhere, but you know, humans make technology and then technology starts to make humans. And then there's a dance that goes on. So we are, you know, for 100,000 years, we've been tool making species. And, you know, that's why there's 8 billion or 7 billion of us on the earth now, again, for better or for worse. But we're very good at, you know, taking our physical environment and now our virtual environment and turning it into tools. But then sometimes those tools either present dangers or become less beneficial than we thought they would be. And there's like a constant evolution and a dance, I think, between the technology we create and then it starts to create us and then we adapt again. But if you look at sort of the broad arc of, you know, human progress over, you know, the last X number of years, 100,000 of years or 5,000 years or whatever your time frames, things like, you know, are generally progressing in a good way. However, I think we've probably reached a state now where we're starting to see a lot of the negatives, you know, in the last 30 or 40 years that the internet has evolved to. You know, I think we have concerns about privacy, what that means. I think we have concerns about who owns us and our data, and our data is often us these days. So who owns and controls and profits from that? You know, I think we've, you know, we're starting to get into machine learning and AI, and there's people, you know, across the spectrum who are more or less concerned about that. But certainly we're starting to see, you know, there's, you know, you don't have to go very far to find obvious examples of how our technology, social media is starting to control us in some way and change our behavior. Certainly there's, you know, sometimes for the better, pretty clearly, sometimes for the worse too. So I think we're at a bit of an inflection point with what we've been building for the last, you know, 20 or 30 years. We're going to start a new dance, and it's either going to be, you know, broadly beneficial, or maybe it's going to result in some really bad effects for a little while. And so, yeah, I think that's where we're at. And I think you got to be aware that both we can control technology and control us. And that can be, you know, that's neutral, but it can have benefits or negative effects to us. So
now you're not a technologist. You have come at it from a different point of view. Right. So you were in law, and I don't know what you wanted to do before you went to law school, or if that was sort of a safe bet. But what mindset do you bring to technology that you think is different from someone, you know, like Matt, or someone who's a computer scientist, or, you know, who's really into the hardwiring of technology?
Yeah. In my next reincarnated life, I'm going to come back as a history teacher. So I really, really sort of have a intellectual interest in history. I probably can't do that because it's really broad ranging and I'm not that interested in any one specific era or time. I really have a passion and love for history. Once you sort of take a broad view of technology and humanity, you kind of see that that's been a driving force in, you know, who we are now. And so just from an academic interest, I like to sort of be able to play with technology in the context of larger historical trends. And then sort of on a personal level, I like building organizations with people who I enjoy interacting with, who are smart, you know, kind of creating my own little tribe of like-minded individuals, and then building something until it becomes, you know, too big and then someone else can have it. But I really like that initial stage of creating a family and a group of people who really like some type of technology and are intellectually interested into it. And it's kind of crazy and chaotic and not too bureaucratic. And so just that sort of starting, you know, first, you know, 1 to 5 or 6 years is just fun. And then I get to play with things that I think are really changing the direction of, you know, where our societies are going. So again, for better or for worse.
Well, especially now that we are living through this, you know, very surreal moment you know, there's a lot of focus on what is not right, and understandably, I mean, it's a traumatic and tragic time in many ways. But it's also, it seems to me, a time when there's been this, like, this speed of which of change around how we work, where we work, the technology we use to do it. From your point of view, is there a technology that you think is really going to change everything in the next couple of years that we all need to be, you know, educating ourselves about?
So two good points. So I'm like, if you want an antidote to the catastrophizing, of the current circumstances, then history will be great for that. I mean, if you think things are as bad as they've ever been, you know, you can just, you know, read a little bit on 1968 and 69 and 70, mm-hmm. or you can go back, you know, hundreds or 200 of years and things, you know, maybe aren't quite as bad as we think they are, or we have more availability to the bad news and, you know, certain algorithms like to feed us the bad news. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I think you got to have a balanced view. And one thing that always keeps me sane is diving back into history and being like, wow, that actually happened. Whew, that's a lot worse than now. So anyway, that helps. And sorry. So new technology. So our current company provides infrastructure for blockchain. And so I think blockchain has a huge amount of potential, or none at all. I don't mm-hmm. think it's being, I don't think we've figured that out yet. It solves some very fundamental computer science problems around openness and trust and security, which are really neat computer science problems that it solves, or the solving of those problems has resulted in blockchain technology, depending on, you know, the cause and effect. Mm. And so that alone, you know, you would think could be transformative or be the next transformation from the first internet over to the web, to the cloud, et cetera, and sort of follow that line. I don't think that it to date has actually, you know, I'm because I'm old and been through three or four of these, if not revolutions, sort of big transformations in the internet. It hasn't realized that potential yet, to be fair. There are a couple certain things I think will stay around. You know, Bitcoin is a store of value, as a basically did to oversimplify a digital version of gold.
Right.
You know, that started to have a history. And if you kind of want to predict things that will stay around or that will be around in the future, look to what's been around for a while. And so that's starting to have some history behind Bitcoin. And I think, you know, as we live in a digital world, then a form of store of value or digital gold kind of makes sense.
Just to back up for a second, blockchain, is that like an ecosystem all on its own, and we just don't know how it can fully exist?
Yeah, so it is, I would say it's a multitude of ecosystems. So there's not one blockchain, you know, Bitcoin is one blockchain.
Okay.
And there are hundreds of others, which are slight permutations of that blockchain. You know, unfortunately, it's an extremely complicated space. People complicate it needlessly. And it's also a little bit difficult to understand. So people are like, it's hard to separate out tokens from the core technology.
Right.
You know, what is this? So it's, you know, it's not an easy space to explain. And one of the things we're pretty focused on is trying to simplify it for people and developers and people who want to use the technology. But yeah, so I would say that each blockchain has its own unique characteristics around some, you know, common fundamental characteristics. And then each one has a community built around it, or is trying to build a community of people who have a financial interest, have a technical interest, et cetera. And they are like a, you know, there's often no central controlling authority to any of these blockchains. So they evolve and mutate and govern themselves in many different ways. So you're kind of seeing in some ways, kind of a virtual laboratory, an evolutionary experiment. We'll see if there's anything beyond speculation, hype, bubbles, or actual use cases that we haven't thought of yet that will, move the current power away from the big data monopolies and that we're all aware of. And
is that the upside to it?
The fact that the promise of the technology is that it's very difficult to control a blockchain. The fundamental structure is that it's decentralized. So, you know, we've seen a lot of centralization of data, privacy, et cetera, between governance and all the big companies that we're aware of, or the few of the big companies we're aware of. And so, one thing about there's no central controlling factor in any distributed blockchain network that controls it in theory. And it's open. so everyone can see what's going on and then trust and verify that what's going on with that network is actually happening and is true and it's not fake news. Right. So you put those factors and that characteristics of this technology together. And in theory and in promise, you may have something that can then allow people to take back their data, their privacy, not have any restrictions on accessibility. And, you know, again, we're trying to provide the tools for other smarter people to figure out how to build those applications and those end user cases that, you know, we're not smart enough to think about, but we're trying to make it easy to actually interface with this technology and discover if that promise can be realized.
So in school right now, should blockchain be part of what we are starting to introduce young people in high school too? Like, should this be another epoch of, you know, the area of transformation that we should be actually just talking about so we can get comfortable understanding the language of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, maybe you don't need a dedicated, I mean, this depending on how important, you know, what makes a patient. This is another discussion. But I think certainly within the context of the history of technology or the role of technology in human affairs, I think that, you know, you have to mention it and have to discuss it. So, you know, certainly in computer science, you know, it's solved a bunch of computer science problems that have been ongoing for years. So it's interesting in that context. But I think if you can sort of teach students, again, better history and then put things in context, yeah, I think it potentially has its place. It's going to be transformative in all the ways which I just talked about.
So this is going to maybe sound like you know, not a smart question, but, you know, what's the difference between cryptocurrency and Bitcoin? Like, you know, sometimes it just goes right over my head and I don't understand it.
So Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency of which there are thousands. And you should think of a cryptocurrency as really the set of incentives that allow you to have so the cryptocurrency is really just an incentive mechanism so that everyone behaves properly within a specific blockchain. So because no one sets the rules, no one sets the day-to-day rules, and because there's no controlling authority, the token or the cryptocurrency, same thing, acts in theory as an incentive mechanism for everyone to behave in a certain way, basically to the benefit of the blockchain community itself. So it's really a way of, you know, you create value in a cryptocurrency or token, and depending on the specific parameters of that network, anyone who holds that token has an incentive to behave in a certain way, basically.
Oh, really?
Depending on how the network is designed. And so no one needs to, like, you can assume that, you know, unless someone is acting really against their own self-interest, it is a way to sort of guarantee that the actors in the network behave in a certain way.
And so do you think that, you know, I have some friends who are entrepreneurs in this area, and, you know, that's where they see their future. And then, you know, there's others like myself who are like wondering, you know, I just want to start understanding what the language and the culture is so that then I can think about, you know, where does this fit? But is this a time when people should just be moving over completely to Bitcoin or living in that? Or is this a time when you should just be aware of these multiple ecosystems of that have different meanings and ways of holding our data and understanding the value proposition of that?
Depends on who you are. If you're a developer or someone who is interested in new technologies or is building in like in the current Web 2.0 environment, you're building applications or using tools in the sort of the mainstream Web 2.0 environment, and I'm referring to the blockchains as Web 3.0, then I think this is something that now is the time to start looking into it as a platform for you to build cool, interesting things on. So I think it's progressing to a state where it's not just a, you know, it's not just a specialized few group of or very early adopters, but we're still really at the developer side. You know, you are you're an engineer or a builder, and you like playing with new technologies, or you like building cool things that you're going to get social recognition for. I think that that's the stage that we're at this point. You know, if you want to play around with, like, as a, you know, if you're not a coder, or you're not writing code, and you want to, you know, speculate and learn more, then you know, just make sure you do that with money that you can lose.
Right.
But I would say that we're kind of at that stage where it's a computer geek technology, and hopefully they will bring it to the mainstream.
Thank you for joining the conversation. We are growing an amazing community here at Let's Talk. Please share the show. Make sure you're subscribing and keep talking. And you can always reach out to me at CoachShayMarville.com or on Instagram at ShayMarville. Let's talk. Let's keep talking.